Welcome to The Cosmic Connection. This is your place to explore the beauty and order of the cosmos.
And your connection to it all.
My name is Amanda Poole Walsh, and I'm the founder of Astrology Hub.
And I'm Rick Merlin Levine, your cosmic navigator.
Now let's dive in.
Let's do it.
This podcast episode is brought to you by The Inner Circle, your place to learn astrology in community with the masters and transform your life in the process.
All right, everybody. Hello and welcome to The Cosmic Connection. It's so great to be here with all of you. Rick, I'm so happy to be here with you. And today we're going to be doing kind of like a stop in the action and assess where are we now? And peek into 2023 and get a glimpse at where we're going. But Rick was talking before we went live. This is kind of like the locker room talk at halftime where the team's getting coached up. So we're having the opportunity to pause and really like get our bearings.
At the risk of not taking credit for things that are really other people's, what I was telling Amanda is that Ram Dass, when he used to give talks, he would have an auditorium full of people and he would just say, you know, you guys are out for the evening to hear Ram Dass. I'm basically in the locker room. It's halftime in whatever your major event is. And I'm in here giving you the, you know, here's where we are. Here's what we got to do to kind of keep going and kind of that halftime locker room coach talk of kind of getting ready for the next part of the game. Because the game is changing.
Finally. Love it. Yes. We are going to be doing a 2023 forecast event. The same, we do this every year, 7th annual. And it's free and you're all invited. So if you're interested in getting more about 2023 after this event, this talk today, you can sign up now. It's astrologyhub.com/20. I think it's forecast 2023. Shoot. Hold on. No, just astrologyhub.com/2023. Oh, that's way easier. So astrologyhub.com/2023, that's free. You can join us. We're going to have lots of different astrologers weighing in on 2023. But today we get to hear from Rick, which is awesome. So tell us why you're saying the game has changed.
You know, we astrologers like to look at events that are statistically improbable. In other words, what makes an event statistically improbable? Well, it's something that doesn't happen every day, or the sun rises every day. It's, you know, statistically very probable that it'll happen every day, unless you live in Seattle, where you can go for days or weeks at a time without seeing the sun. The thing is that we are coming out of a period of time where there has been a stacked deck of one major astrological event after another, back to back to back to back. And of course, you can look at the history of what's gone on so far, really, in the 21st century, but beginning with the Uranus-Pluto squares of 2015 to really even 2020, 2010 to 2015 was when they were the closest, but really even longer than that. And it's my contention that we're really just coming out of that square now, even though it's already been very wide. I'll swing back and explain why I think that in just a moment. But, you know, 2020 was really the punctuation mark on that Uranus-Pluto square, because it began to widen enough. But Saturn, swinging through that square, first conjoined Pluto, and that Saturn-Pluto event being January of 2020, which was the first diagnosis of COVID, and the published actually cases in China were within 24 hours of the exact Saturn-Pluto conjunction. But of course, during that period of time, Saturn and Pluto weren't the only characters visiting Capricorn. We had the south node of the moon there, so it was involved. We also had Jupiter moving through. Normally, Jupiter moves quite slowly, but compared to Saturn and Pluto, it was moving pretty quickly. And it came through there, and it lined up with Pluto three times. Which, you know, does once every 13 years, really. And then it caught up with Saturn, which it does every 20 years. But this was a one in four century changing of elements that we called the grand mutation or the grand conjunction or the great Saturn-Pluto. I'm sorry, the great Saturn, Jupiter-Saturn conjunction. And so from the beginning of 2020 all the way through the year, we had Saturn-Pluto, and then we had Jupiter-Pluto three times. Each of those times corresponded with another wave of fear around the coronavirus or COVID, whatever you want to call it. But as I've been saying for a couple of years, the pandemic was not the virus. There was a pandemic of fear, and the virus was the primary symptom. But then by the end of the year, we had the Saturn-Pluto. By the end of the year, we had the Saturn, the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction, and that was an air sign in Aquarius, kind of as a harbinger of what was coming around the corner. And that by itself would have been a big deal. But that took us to 2021, where we had three occurrences of Saturn, which had already conjoined Pluto. Remember, the key event so far in the 20th century, or the most statistically improbable, was the square between Uranus and Pluto, the two guys that joined up in the 60s that made the 60s the 60s. So now in the 2010s, they squared, and Saturn by 2020 comes and lines up with Pluto, but by 2021, it's squaring Saturn, which has moved away from it. And so it's not really until Saturn finished squaring Uranus, because we had this, the Saturn conjoining Pluto in 2020 and squaring Uranus in 2021 three times. And yet it was really all the way up to Election Day in the United States when we had what I considered to be the final footfall, the final, the last kick, if you will, of the Saturn square Uranus, which is really the last kick of the Uranus square Pluto going back all the way 10, 15 years ago. And so it's very significant. And, you know, although I say it was the election in the United States, it just happened to have fallen on Election Day in the United States. But you look around the world and there were global breakaways and changes, you know, all around the world. I mean, there's certainly stuff going on in Russia, in Brazil, in China, in Taiwan, and in Iran, absolutely, certainly, where all of these are pieces of this puzzle. But it's almost like we are now at a point where all of that is going to become history. Now, that doesn't mean we're just all of a sudden free and clear of everything and that's it, it's all over. But there's a change in the air. And that change in the air in some way is moving away from this intense uncertainty of these deep, profound changes and the old versus the new, and not having any idea of how we're going to move through this. And again, it's going to take years for us to really kind of resolve some of these issues, as if maybe they'll ever be resolved. But I think that that right now we're in a very significant period. I say right now, meaning the middle toward near the let's say the middle. How do I want to say this? Around the middle half to the two-thirds point, let's say November 14th through the 23rd or 4th. This period of time is, I'm calling this the Great Blue Wave or the Big Blue Wave. And I'm not here referring to blue as Democrat, liberal. I'm not referring to this even as anything to do with the elections, although some people may want to make ties and that's okay. But this blue wave is actually, after all this intensity, we have over the course of a few days, we have planets that had clustered in Scorpio in November. And remember, Scorpio is a fixed sign. So these planets clustering in Scorpio were creating a T-square with their opposition to Uranus and Taurus and their square to Saturn and Aquarius. We're back to that Saturn-Uranus square. And so as these planets moved not only through Scorpio, but through the lunations in Scorpio and the eclipse of the Taurus full moon while the sun was in Scorpio, eclipsed and conjoining Uranus and squaring Saturn, as all of this happened, now all of a sudden, starting about a week after Election Day, starting around the 14th, 15th, here we are now on the 17th, we're kind of in the middle of this great blue wave. And when I say blue wave, I'm really referring to the blue of Sagittarius. You know, there's something about Sagittarius that is big and blue. Blue is the color of the open sky. You know, when you talk about going into the wild blue yonder, the skies that are unobstructed and you can see forever, they're blue, or even at night, they're not black, they're blue black. There's that bluish color that kind of in some way denotes an openness. And even the fact that blue being the color that's associated with the Democratic or liberal or left-wing lean is, for better or worse, allegedly more open. There's just this openness to the color blue. And so we have Jupiter, the big blue planet, the biggest planet in the sky. And we have Jupiter, which rules Sagittarius. And we have bing, 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 bing. There's five of them. Bing, 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 bing. We have, over the course of a week, we have Venus moving to the end of Scorpio, making a trine with Jupiter, and then a day later moving into Sagittarius. This is on the 15th of November. And then we have a day after that, we had Mercury following right behind it on the 16th and 17th today, moving again, Mercury making a trine with Jupiter, which incidentally is retrograde still, but it's pretty stationary because Jupiter turns direct on the 23rd, and it's part of this whole big blue wave because Jupiter right now is at the same degree, it's holding its position while Mercury backs through, it's trine to Jupiter as Mercury goes to 29 degrees of Scorpio, and Jupiter is at 28 degrees of Pisces, and then Venus moves into Scorpio. And then a few days later, because the sun moves about a degree a day, on the 20th, the sun makes its trine to Jupiter on its last day in Scorpio. And then as it moves into Sagittarius the next day on the 21st or 22nd, depending upon where you are on the planet, then the sun moves into Sagittarius. Now we have the sun, Mercury, and Venus all in Sagittarius, with Mercury and Venus coming into a conjunction. And then a couple days later, the moon moves through Scorpio, or the moon, which is already moving through Scorpio, then makes its trine to Jupiter. And we have the new moon in Sagittarius when the moon moves into Sagittarius on the 23rd. So this 14th through the 23rd is really this kind of, we get to see a future. We get to see, we might not like everything about it, but we might like things better about it than we thought we were going to. And there's this sense of this is the curing of the alloy of the copper and tin that makes bronze that I talked about last month, that it's like, this is the way it is. And we will work with it, but it gives us an opportunity to at least have a moment of stability while we're looking forward rather than just looking backward. So that's why I think that this is such an important turning point. And as we get into first December and then on into 2023, in December, we have Neptune turning direct and Chiron turning direct. They're the last of the outer planets to turn direct. So things again now are moving forward. There is a bit of a backward ripple at the end of December when Mercury turns retrograde the end of December. But going into 2023, we have a lot of energy moving forward. Mars is just about done with its retrograde a sweep, and Mars turns direct on January 12th. Mercury turns direct on January 18th. This is in 2023. And we actually have a Venus retrograde in 2023 from the end of July through the beginning of September. And that's in Leo, and that's going to be a very interesting retrograde period that I'm sure we astrologers will be digging into more. But the thing about 2023 is that there's two outer planets that change signs, and they're really, it's a transition point. But again, we have to go back to the great conjunction in air, in Aquarius, of Jupiter and Saturn. And we've had 5 years, Saturn spends about 2.5 years roughly in each sign. We've had about 5 years of Saturn moving through domicile home signs because Saturn is at home in Capricorn. And now that it's in Aquarius, it's still at home. But Saturn actually moves into Pisces on March 7th of 2023, and it remains in Pisces throughout the rest of that entire year. And this is going to be the first year in 5-6 years where Saturn is not at home in its sign. In fact, Saturn may be a little bit lost in Pisces because Saturn likes boundaries, and Pisces brings in the fog. We'll talk more about that again, you know, over the weeks and months, and even over the couple of years ahead that Saturn will be in Pisces. But this is a huge and dramatic shift from where we've been with Saturn in a structural sign, whether it was Earth structure Capricorn or even Aquarius, which is conceptual fixed air. It's mental structures. And as Saturn moves out of Aquarius and into Pisces, this is something that we'll feel and we'll see. We may be a little bit less unsure, but there's something that is deeper that begins to cook because Saturn in Pisces relies on a deeper spiritual connection than it does either in Capricorn or in Aquarius. And then the other thing that we get a taste of in 2023 that doesn't really become a reality fully until 2024 and then is with us for another 20 some odd years. And that is that on March 23rd, March is the big turning point in early next year, because not only does Saturn move into Pisces in March of 2023, but Pluto moves out of Capricorn, where it's been for 20 years, and Pluto has done its work in Capricorn of creating upheaval, of in Nietzsche's words, nihilistically dealing with the structures. And Nietzsche talked about nihilism being that those things that have become the most important, that have got to the top of the mountain, kind of dissipate and fall to the bottom. And we've seen the breakdown of structures that we believed were immutable. And yet that's what Pluto in Capricorn does, is it takes those immutable structures and it recycles them. And so by 2023, we're going to get a little taste of Pluto moving into Aquarius. However, we can't get too excited because it's only in Aquarius from March 23rd to June 11th when it retrogrades back into Capricorn, where it'll do its remedial work and finish up, and then it'll move back into Aquarius direct in 2024. So the big outer planet movements that kind of push us into the future, interestingly enough, occur in the same month when Mars, which, as we know, has been retrograde not long yet, but will be basically in the same sign in Gemini for nearly 7 months. Mars in March finally moves out of its shadow, and it moves out of its shadow around the same time that the two outer planets of Saturn and Pluto both change signs and move into their new homes. Saturn going to be there stably through the rest of the year, and Pluto just giving us a little bit of a glimpse and an inkling of what's around the corner. So that's why I think that we're in such a dynamic turning point. I think that we're going to really feel by 2023 and really even into 2024 that we're moving into the future. We're not just dealing with March of 2020 that for some people still isn't over.
Wow. Okay. So I have a question before we go. So, I mean, before we go into some more details, but Pluto moving into Aquarius for 4 months in 2023.
Not even that long, I don't think. March 23rd to April to May to June 11th, 2.5 months, almost 3 months.
When a planet changes signs and moves into a new one and then retrogrades back out of it, is the ingress into it sort of like the big drumbeat of it? Is that the one that's setting the tone for the next 25 years?
It varies person to person, culture to culture. For some people, they'll be in it and so overripe and ready that'll be it, and away they go. And then when it retrogrades back into Capricorn, they're going to go, oh no, we got to go back. And for other people, they're going to go, as it goes into Aquarius, it's too much. It's into the future. Remember, we have a huge segment of our society, for better or worse, that are not letting go of the past, that they want to go back to something that was something in the past, and they want to make America great again. You know, they want to recapture something in the past. And I'm not judging that. That's the important thing about what Saturn does. It prevents us from being in a runaway train. So we need to, in some way, hold on to some of those stable structures from the past. And when Pluto goes into Aquarius in Capricorn, it's at least given that anchor in the past. And when Pluto goes from Capricorn into Aquarius, there are going to be people who are going to be freaking out. And they possibly will come out of the woodwork until then. It's only a couple of months. Pluto is back in Capricorn. We're safe again. But that's not going to be the end of the game. We're talking about a period of transition here. And so how people react to it and how the culture reacts to it, I imagine there'll be some things that'll be pretty obvious. Remember, Aquarius has no gray. Mm-hmm. You know, what I mean by that is Aquarius as a sign, Saturn's been in Aquarius for a couple of years now. Aquarius is black and white. It's all or nothing. It's past or future. There's no present moment in a way. Aquarius is the extreme energy. And that's where, and Saturn moving through Aquarius over the past, year and a half or so has basically kind of solidified, which is crystallized, what those boundaries are between black and white, between this and that. And you can put whatever you want in this and that and it'll work because it's that generalistic or that general. We're talking in symbolism here. And so the point is that when Saturn is in Aquarius, it's doing some crystallization. But when Pluto moves into Aquarius, remember, Pluto is take no prisoners. Pluto is like Roto-Rooter. When it goes to clean out, you know, the sewer or your colon, you know, or the underworld, it takes no prisoners. Everything goes. Now, what does that mean? We'll have to see. But we're going to get a short little flavor of it, and then it settles back. And that allows a bit of remediation and a bit of mediation so that when Pluto does go direct into Aquarius in 2024 and then stays there for a couple of decades, it might not feel as abrupt. But I think we'll feel things. And I think March and April next year, I'm adding April to it because we're not talking about an event of a planet moving into a sign, Saturn moving into Pisces or Pluto moving into Aquarius. We're talking about a transition. We're talking about moving through a portal into a new space. And so I think we're going to be feeling that at the very edge, at, you know, through March, toward the end of March, then in April, even in May. And by June, we get a little bit of a reprise. As Pluto backs into Capricorn, but Saturn will still be in Pisces, and that Saturn in Pisces will be an interesting thing unto itself. Remember, when Saturn's moving through Pisces, it actually has a date, and that date that it has is not fulfilled in 2023. I got myself ahead of myself here. I got to quickly tell you when it will be fulfilled. When Saturn moves into Pisces, its main event is going to be its conjunction with Neptune, which is trying to get out of Pisces before Saturn catches up to it. And so Saturn actually catches up to Neptune just after Neptune peaks into Aries, which it does in 2025, and Saturn lines up with Neptune. This is now is not the old and the new, Saturn the old and Uranus the new. This is Saturn now the old, the stable, the boundaries, with Neptune kind of dissolving them by 2025 and down the road after that. This may be the, if I use the word meta, I do not mean the company, I mean the concept, and I'm totally annoyed with Gary Zuckerberg taking the name Meta for his company, because I'm rewriting some essays that I wrote 30 years ago, and the subtitle of this book is Essays on the Meta, on the Physics of Metaphysics. And the question really for me has always been, how does meta, meaning not physical, metaphysical, become physical? And interestingly enough, in 2025, when Saturn, the planet of physical, joins up with Neptune, the planet of imagination, therefore metaphysical, we might see some interesting stuff hit the market in a very large scale commercial way that may be augmented reality or what we're calling artificial reality. I think there's so much around the corner that we can't even quite envision. But that's the Saturn moving through Pisces, which is kind of crystallizing and clearing up some of this metaphysical stuff that Neptune in Pisces for the past, you know, 12, 13 years has kind of really dissolved. One other thing that doesn't quite happen as quickly as we would like, or as we might like, and that is that Jupiter is the other planet that changes signs. Jupiter lasts about a year in each sign, but its retrograde dance often does strange things, like it is now, where it's back in Pisces, but by the end of December, Jupiter is going to be direct and moving. Actually, Jupiter turns direct in November on the same day as the Sagittarius new moon on November 23rd. But Jupiter doesn't move out of Pisces back into Aries, where it's already been, until the end of the year, until the end of December. But then Jupiter actually, by May, moves into Taurus. And remember, right now we have Uranus in Taurus. And so it's real exciting to think that as Jupiter moves into Taurus, that it's going to catch up with Uranus. This is an exciting conjunction because it always opens portals into the future and shows us possibilities. And so Jupiter moving into Taurus reaches about 14 degrees of Taurus by October. It moves into Taurus in May of 2023, which is another step in away from whatever it is that has been. And Uranus is at 22 degrees, so Jupiter goes retrograde in October. It doesn't make that conjunction with Uranus until late April of 2024. That's when it finally makes that conjunction with Uranus, which is very, very exciting. So again, we can see 2023, we're getting tastes and glimpses of the future. We're not looking behind as much as we have been, but we're still in that kind of place like where Moses was wandering around the desert, waiting for permission to go into the quote unquote promised land, into the future, if you will, but couldn't go until all the stuff from the past, meaning all the people that had lived in slavery, according to that story, had passed on. So that in a way we're in this, what do you call it? It's a, not subliminal, but liminal. The liminal is like a place in between. And we're like in this place in between, but we're importantly not in the past. We're not fully in the future yet, but it's obvious we're going somewhere.
So it's a little bit like limbo.
The difference is with limbo, there's no direction. I mean, from my understanding is you can stay in limbo forever.
That's right. Yep.
We got direction here. There's nothing that's going to prevent us from going into the future.
Change is in the air. We're no longer where we were. There was this event in the 60s, Uranus square Pluto.
Uranus conjunct Pluto in the 60s.
Uranus conjunct Pluto.
That's like the new moon. That was like the thing that set the tone. That was a once every other century alignment of Uranus, the new, and Pluto, the absolute. It was the revolution hit the deep, all that stuff that came out then and again came out again when Uranus squared Pluto in the 2010s, 2015, in that period of time when we had a replay of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. What do I mean by that? We had gay marriages legalized and we had marijuana and drugs available first medically and then recreationally. We had environmental stuff all over the place. We had civil rights issues again in our face. None of these things had gone away, but they were all semi-dormant. They were there, but they didn't pop back up like a forest in bloom with the exact same flowers and crops that were around in the mid 60s to early 70s.
Yeah. Rick, over the weekend, I watched the movie Woodstock. I mean, I know there's a bunch of movies called Woodstock, but this one was Woodstock, 3 days that defined a generation, I think. And I was just blown away listening to what they were saying and the whole purpose and intent. And the name of it was something Aquarian, right? The tagline of Woodstock, the actual. So, but it was just so interesting.
I was stuck in a traffic jam about 40 miles away and ended up turning around and going back home. I couldn't get
there. No way. Oh my gosh. I was wondering if you were there. I'm sure we would have heard that story if you were.
No, but I'd seen I'd seen every band that played there live over the past couple of years prior to that. Yeah.
Well, I was just blown away with the astrological lens. I mean, there was a quote at the end that was like, this was just a cosmic moment in time where we got to experience what was possible when humans come together in with the intention of peace, you know. And it was just, it was so, I was crying. It was beautiful. And then to just see it come back around, and it is very different the way it came back around, but it's the same things, you know.
Well, you know, in at the square, you know, not only did we have a replay of feminism with a different twist, and that is the legalization, you know, of gay marriages nationally. I mean, you know, as a law. Not only did we have issues of environmentalism coming back, but we had, you know, that was the Arab Spring. You know, it was Occupy Wall Street. We hadn't seen that amount of demonstrations on the streets since the 60s, since the late 60s. And again, it wasn't just the United States thing. You know, that cultural kind of revolution that hit, that kind of peaked at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in 68. I mean, there were much larger events and mass arrests and military intervention, you know, in Mexico City, in Paris, and certainly in China, the Cultural Revolution. But it was that energy that came back, and it was that energy that came back in the 2012 to 2015, really 2010 to 2020 in a wider sense. And of course, you've had Rick Tarnas, you know, on an interview here, and his book Cosmos and Psyche really digs into this, you know, a whole lot deeper. But it's that energy from the 60s and then from the mid 2010s that actually we're talking about now is reaching a turning point. And it's almost like that's closing or closed down. And it doesn't mean that the things that were stirred up from that just go away, but they may not dominate the news every hour.
Right. Okay. So you called it a punctuation mark. You said there's 2020 was the punctuation mark on the Uranus-Pluto conjunction from the 60s. And that November, this, what we just had, is the final kick of this Saturn Uranus square that was activating those.
Exactly. It was the Saturn conjunct Pluto followed by Saturn square Uranus that kind of tickled the Pluto square Uranus. So if we had Pluto square Uranus exact 2012 to 2015, seven times, Pluto square Uranus, as Saturn came through, they were already widening from the square, but that Saturn conjuncted Pluto first. By the time it got to the square to the Pluto, the square was already done, but it kind of set in motion this thing that it wasn't until it finished the square until Saturn, which is moving faster than Pluto or Uranus, it wasn't until it finished the square to Uranus that the Uranus-Pluto square kind of was finally over, which really goes back to the stuff in the 60s. And so that's the thing that we astrologers get that missed sometimes is we like to take an event and look at it and just talk about what that event is. I always use the example, like aspirin is the active ingredient of white willow bark. You know, and so we can take aspirin as the active ingredient and talk about it and take it for a headache, but it's not as integratable into the system and it's not as healthy as it is to take white willow bark. And with astrology, we often look for the active ingredient and pull it out and talk about it as if it was separate. And this is a perfect example of how we have movement from the 60s to the 2012 to 15 to the 2020 to the 2022 and now on beyond. And in fact, one could even pull back further and look at that Uranus-Pluto cycle and go back to a conjunction, let's say, in 1455 when the printing press was invented. You know, I mean, at a Uranus-Pluto conjunction and watch its unfolding over the years ahead out of that. I'm not going to do that right now But one could. I could. Rick Tarnas's book does that. And so we gain perspective when we look at these events through like a camera with a wide angle. You know, you can take a picture and I could take a picture of the microphone, or I could take a picture of this room, or if I had a very wide angle lens, I could take a picture of the West Coast of the United States.
Yeah. I love doing both. It's really nice that we get to hone in on like a week or even a day, and then we get to pan out and see where we're at in the bigger story that's unfolding. Yeah. And it goes back to what you said in the beginning. This is like the locker room talk in the middle of the game. The game is changing. There's different things happening moving forward. And whatever the game has been, from what I'm hearing, it's kind of that phase is a little bit done. And now it's not that the effects of it are gone.
And the political, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's going to be really difficult over the years ahead. I mean, because that's part of how the alloy has cured, you know, but it's important that it cured in the state of dialogue or in the state of conflict rather than in the state of one side, and pick any event, absolutely winning, shutting down the other side completely. I know, like in the United States, there are certain events where it seemed to have been more of a wave one way than another. And then when you look at how it all combines, you know, we have a split Congress for, you know, at least a couple of years. But in some ways, that's a perfect metaphor for what it is that we need to deal with. And we are not going to be able to run away from that. We have to deal with the fact that if we're going to move forward, we have to figure out ways to temper the extremity. But again, some of that's going to be tricky as Pluto moves into Aquarius, and there's certainly going to be some waves of extremity over the years ahead. However, with Saturn moving into Pisces, we may get a couple of years of kind of being able to put that off into some time in the future, a couple of years down the road.
Can you talk a little bit more just about the flavor of Pluto and Aquarius?
I can, but I can't. I'll tell you why I can, and I'll tell you why I can't, and then I will anyhow.
Perfect.
I can because astrologically, I've developed some skill at combining the energy of planets as they live in different signs. I can't because the last time Pluto was in Aquarius was in the 1770s, 80s, 90s. I don't know what it's like. Pluto is in Aquarius for about 20, 25 years, every 250 years or so. Now, with Saturn going into Pisces, I know people with Saturn in Pisces. I know three generations of people with Saturn in Pisces. And so I have a sense of how that works. But with Uranus, Neptune and Pluto in particular, all I can do is take the meanings of the planets and combine them. And so what's the meaning of Pluto? Well, Pluto is the planet that brings the unconscious into consciousness. It's the planet that has to do with transformation, or as Jung would call it, the transfiguration of symbol. That one thing is turned into something else in a process. The alchemical process, for example, of turning lead into gold is a plutonic process because it involves something changing from one thing into another. Pluto relating to death, you know, is not necessarily physical death. I always think of my guy, William Blake, who wanted as his epitaph, William Blake, born 1757, died many times since. You know, death is letting go of anything. Anytime anyone says, no, Amanda, you can't have that, you know, or we have to do this, we can't do that, or no, you can't be like that, or whatever. Every time we meet some Saturnian resistance or naysaying, a bit of us dies. You know, so Pluto, as it moves through a sign, creates death with the automatic, I want to say assumption, that's not quite the right word, with the automatic caveat that nothing can die without being reborn. So that Pluto moving through Sagittarius, which it did prior to Capricorn, was a couple of decades of televangelism and people with these wholly brilliant ideas who largely went to jail, you know, for money scams and sex crimes and whatever. But that was a whole thing of beliefs and the expansion of one's mind, but that kind of fell apart. And then we had Pluto in Capricorn. What fell apart? The government. You know, there are still people who are waiting for the banks to follow suit. They've held together largely. Yeah, there have been a couple of problems in this period of time with Pluto and Capricorn, including the, you know, real estate, you know, collapse. But when Pluto is in Capricorn, one would expect the infrastructure being the key word here, but the structure that holds the structure together to begin to decay and fray at the edges. And regardless of where you are politically, the fact is that we've passed on a federal government in the United States level, we've passed the largest infrastructure rebuilding bill law now that's ever been done. And it's been done with Pluto in Capricorn. Rebuild the decaying structures, roads, bridges, government buildings, you know, all these kinds of things. But the other thing is that when you talk about structures, you talk about the structure of the government itself. It's built upon a constitution, at least the United States government is. And we've had even that kind of come into an awareness that, again, wherever you fall on any political structure, it's not working. Something isn't working the way it was intended to, or the way it was intended to maybe isn't how it should be. Regardless, Pluto in Capricorn brought all these things that were so stable and could never possibly fall apart into falling apart. And now as Pluto moves into Aquarius, what is Aquarius? Well, it's technology. Can we expect some breakthroughs in technology that kind of make whatever the old systems are that we've built things on fall apart, i.e. petroleum-based energy? I mean, you know, we've had for decades the general awareness that we need to end our dependence on petroleum-based energy, and we've certainly poked our heads here and there and here and there. But what if all of a sudden something occurred that someone came up with or discovered or rediscovered something that was absolutely free energy? And overnight, boom, everything changes. That's the kind of thing that one can expect with Pluto and Aquarius. Not that it has to be positive, but it has to in some way bring down a technological piece of the puzzle rather than a structural, even though this is certainly, you know, the petroleum industry is certainly structural. One might look at the same thing when it comes to the pharmaceutical industry and, you know, and health considerations or health cures. These are two areas where Pluto and Aquarius, because remember, Aquarius is about the future. Aquarius is also about network. You see, Capricorn is built on hierarchy. You know, Capricorn has as its symbol, as its animal totems, it has the mountain goat and the sea goat. And the mountain goat lives higher. It's the mammal that lives at the highest altitude on the planet. And the sea goat, which is the dolphin, the Greeks called the dolphins the sea goat. They knew it was a mammal. And so it had more in common with the goat than a fish. And so the sea goat and the mountain goat defined a hierarchy. Altitude, height, and depth. Aquarius has no hierarchy. Aquarius is equanimity. It's equality. And of course, equality is a tough thing to take if you believe that one gender, one sexual preference, one race, one skin color is supreme, is better than the others, all of a sudden that's problematic if Pluto comes along or any planet comes along or anything comes along and makes things into a flat playing field. A flat playing field is not nearly as much fun for someone who is on top of a mountain. Because on top of a mountain, then you get to dominate or you get to be the authority for everyone at a lower hierarchy. Now, I'm not talking politics here. I'm talking energetic dynamics. And so as Pluto goes into Aquarius, and Saturn leaves Aquarius, but as Pluto goes into Aquarius, we can expect the network, what that means, what it means to be in a community. We can expect that to all be turned upside down, inside out, and backwards. And again, some of this, I think, we're set up for, as Saturn went through Aquarius, the stability, Saturn, the structure in Aquarius was we got structure for creating communities that were non-local. One could say Zoom. One could say what we're doing right now. I mean, Amanda, you and I are talking, where are we? And Joe is hanging out, you know, at the control board. Where are we? You know, are we here or are we there? This is Aquarius. This is the network is flattened and that all places are here. All time is now and no one is in charge. Now, what's it going to look like as we move in that direction? Well, the people in charge are going to fight like tooth and nail. There's a line from a Jackson Brown song called Before the Deluge, one of his beautiful kind of anthem songs. You can find a link, I'm sure, on YouTube and a link to the lyrics and follow along. It's a magical song. But one of the verses is, and it's talking about that change of before the deluge, whatever that means. And one of the verses goes, I'm doing this from memory, so bear with me. Some of them were angry at the way the earth was abused by the men who learned how to forge her beauty into power. And they struggled to protect her from them, only to be confused by the magnitude of the fury in the final hour. What that is about is the people in control are not going to let go of control without a fight. They were surprised by the magnitude of the fury in the final hour, protecting the earth from those who were abusing it and making money from it. Now, I think it's a much wider spectrum there than that. But the point is that Pluto in Aquarius, I think, is going to see some war, and war with Pluto and Aquarius may move out of the physical realms into the metaphysical realms, where actually it already is being fought. I mean, there was a time historically when all war was survival of the strongest, where all war was about engaging physically one army with another army. And we've moved out of that into a combination of that and the survival of the smartest. It's not whose army is bigger or stronger. It's which side is smarter, which side can outwit the other side, not just physically, but mentally with technology or with ideas. And you see this, the information wars already being fought out in front of our eyes, if you pay attention, you know, even info wars. I mean, it's like you don't need to make this stuff up. It's right there and, you know, in front of us. But I think with Pluto and Aquarius, we're going to see that deep upheaval, instead of being just affecting, it's not just affecting, but instead of mainly affecting the structures, banking, real estate, government, religious foundations, it's going to be also impacting the information itself, the information technology, the future. We're going to see some real upheaval with that. Now, remember, though, we're talking of, you know, a 20 plus year period of time. So we may not see it all in March, April, and May of 2023.
Thank you for that. I love that we went all the way back to Pluto and Sagittarius. And then to be able to glimpse forward. And it seems like
the way you did it, even though you've never lived through Pluto and Aquarius, so you don't really know, but the way that you put them together would be the same way retrospectively that we would put together Sagittarius and Capricorn.
Well, then go back before that with Pluto and Scorpio. That was the, you know, during that period of time, there was an intense rise of awareness around sexuality tied to death. There was the, you know, HIV AIDS epidemic. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't the only event. There were a lot of other things, but that was one of the significant pieces of Pluto in Scorpio. Was the, until then, you know, sex had been associated with pregnancy, but not with death, you know, and you go back, you know, prior to that, and you have Pluto in Libra, and the Pluto in Libra generation, now that it has come of age, is redefining relationships. Again, it's the old idea, you know, of a, you know, one monogamous marriage for one's entire life, with the male being, you know, the breadwinner and the female being, you know, the subservient, what, you know, possession, even legally going back historically. But you find that Pluto and Libra generation, and during that period of time, we had this striving to create some new kind of equality in Libra relationships, and that took tearing down the old, you know. Mm-hmm. And we can go back and back and back, but just those come to mind also.
Mm. I'm Pluto in Libra.
Yes, you know, yeah,
it's been a big redefinition of that, and it's in progress. I think we're all still figuring it out.
Yeah, well, I have Pluto in Leo, and one of the great writers of astrology textbooks, Ron Davison, who in our astrology fundamentals class, I recommended his book called Astrology. He said that one of the symptoms of Pluto in Leo is megalomania. Now, megalomania is a clinical definition of a symptom of schizophrenia where you think you're God. And he said that was one of the downsides, you know, of Pluto in Leo, is that you can think you're God. But mm-hmm. It's the Pluto in Leo generation that was the I, me, mine, you know, generation that what's the most, I mean, you, again, I am of that generation. But one of its downfalls was the implied narcissism of that generation. And yet even the religious tendencies of that generation, you know, came from ideas of Buddhism and Hinduism where everyone was God, you know, yes. You are God, I am God, everyone is God. And right. So it's interesting that when that was written prior to Pluto being in Leo, it was written as, because Leo is so self-driven and so, you know, kind of wanting to be on show, that would be a horrific thing. And maybe it's a good and bad thing, but it's not only a bad thing. And so it's interesting how these things fulfill. Just another aside.
All right. So in just to back up, essentially, we're in a transition right now. As we're speaking in November of 2022, we're in this, what you called the blue wave, which is this big turning point of a lot of Sagittarian, Jupiterian energy, all happening right around now. It's giving us a glimpse into the future as we're moving into 2023. The biggest astrology of 2023 that we talked about today, which I know there'll be more, but essentially Mars going direct in January, the two outer planets changing signs, the Saturn going into Pisces, Pluto going into Aquarius.
And Jupiter then, going into Taurus, but not until May.
Right, exactly. Jupiter into Taurus, and also lining up with Uranus, right?
And also, but that's not until 2024.
Ah, we skipped over. Yes. Okay. Then yeah. We went into 2024. So there, and you also said that Saturn moving into Pisces, Saturn has a date with Neptune, which is going to happen in 2025.
Right. And that date of Saturn moving into Pisces, because through 2023 and into 2024, Saturn and Neptune are both in Pisces. Neptune is Pisces is the dream. Come enjoy it. Imagine. Metta is wonderful. It's this kind of like no boundaries. But Saturn has a job in Pisces, and that job is to catch up to Neptune and to condense or crystallize enough of that imagination to make it real. But Saturn can't catch up to Neptune until it just squeaks into Aries. So it's an interesting dance, and that happens in 2025. And of course, Neptune in Aries, Neptune changes signs only once every 14 years. So all of a sudden, in a 1.5, 2-year period of time, you're going to have, and actually you can add into that Uranus moving from Taurus into Gemini in 2025 or 2026.
I'll tell you. I think it's 2026.
Yeah, I think it is also. I think it just barely, barely touches into 2025. It does. In 2025, in October, it peaks into Gemini for a couple of months and then back in permanently in 2026. But the point here is that we have over these few years, we have Pluto that changes signs. Well, Pluto's moving fast right now. It's not as fast as it was when it was in Scorpio, where it only spent 12, 13 years in Scorpio. When Pluto's moving slowly, it'll spend 30 years plus in a sign. But right now it's in the 23, 24 year range. And so Pluto, which changes signs once every other decade, Neptune changes signs every 14 years, Uranus changes signs every 7 years, and Saturn changes signs every 2.5 years. And all of them are changing signs in 2023 and or 2024 and or 2025. This is a totally extraordinary period, but it's extraordinary different. It's extraordinary in a different way than the amount of conflict, tension, pressure that we've had from the dynamics of the planets in the same signs. Now, as they move into different signs, where we have a lot of adjusting to do to what's next, to what's new. And that's why, again, with all of a sudden the Sun, Mercury, Venus, and then the Moon's new moon all in Sagittarius, we have this ability to look ahead. You know, this time of year in the Northern Hemisphere, you know, we're 2 months into autumn. Autumn, you know, begins when the leaves are all beautiful and pretty. And then Scorpio comes and the leaves turn brown and they die. And a lot of it gets cold and a lot of them fall to the ground. But by the time the Sun is in Sagittarius, even the oak trees that have held on to their leaves, they're just brown and crispy, but they're still on the trees. By the time Sagittarius comes and an ice storm comes running through, you can go outside and you can see forever, meaning that there's no leaves that block your vision. It just opens up. And I find that a good example of understanding that in Sagittarius, one of the reasons why we like to take adventures, why we like to go back to school and take a 6-year PhD program, and why we like to travel somewhere is because things open up and we can see the potential. So we are in this little window now of these much larger changes where we've been encumbered by day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month heaviness. And we're not yet into the future, but we're right now in the middle this week and for the next few days yet, and even on into December, even though the moon moves out of Sagittarius, and even though Mercury will be the first to leave Sagittarius, it'll stay there for about 2.5 weeks. But even still, we have right now such an opening with all these planets in Sagittarius and with Jupiter moving direct, stationary direct, and now moving into Aries, which is the start, the new. We had a flavor of Jupiter in Aries already earlier in 2022, but it was not yet. Now we're back. And it's like now we get to see the future. And we need to have individually the courage to imagine what our greatest and best future is, because this is a moment when that actually can plant seeds for what the future actually becomes. Now, you know, if we do nothing, not everyone is going to feel great during this week, but more people than have in a while might have some sense of relief, some sense of uplifting somewhere, somehow. And for those who do, if you don't take and convert some of that positive feeling or confidence into zoning in and either making a plan or thinking about it or kind of flushing out a little bit of what it is that you might want to do or see yourself, think big, think 2, 3, 5 years down the road. Think, you know, Uranus in Gemini and Neptune in Aries and Pluto in Aquarius without necessarily taking the long three-year, four-year road to get there, and imagine what you could be. That's an ideal use of this period of time.
Okay. Evelyn says, Amanda, you need a curtain for that window. Evelyn, I know. I never do broadcasts at this time, and so I've never had this experience in this room. This is a new room for me. So yes, I need a curtain. But you all have been so nice about it. Thank you. Okay, so you also said 2023 is giving us glimpses into the future. It's like we're Moses wandering around the desert. We're in a place in between. We're not in the past, but we're not really in limbo. We have a direction, like we are moving forward. So it's not the same as just sort of wandering around in circles. We're definitely moving forward, but we are a little bit still in between, in transition. And what you just shared about having the courage to imagine our greatest and best future and convert any positive feelings that we have right now into making a plan for the next 2 to 3 years, 3 to 5 years, whatever it is. And you said to think big. So
it doesn't matter whether it's realistic right now. The goal right now is to grab your surfboard and surf that blue wave.
Nice.
And that blue wave meaning Sagittarius and Jupiter.
Right. And what you just described about the leaves falling, and then that's when you have more of a view. That makes so much sense.
It's unobstructed.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Okay. Rick, thank you. This has been so much fun. I love it. I love when we have this opportunity to pan out and get big picture. And we're going to have you on for the December forecast soon. We may have a special guest with you, which will be a really fun new dynamic. And then we're going to have you on for the weekly weather mid-December. You're going to be covering the 2 weeks in December, right? Honing in? Yep.
Yeah.
So lots of Rick Levine coming up for all of us, which is great. Thank you all for being here and for being so much fun in the chat. I love watching you connect with each other too. It's really awesome. Just thank you for being here. Make sure that you sign up for our 2023 forecast event. It's free. There's going to be 13 different astrologers bantering and talking and going back and forth on the astrology of 2023. So we'll cover some of these big ones that we covered today, plus other angles of what's happening that other astrologers are honing in on. And you're also going to get a by sign breakdown. So you'll get videos from different astrologers that will break down the 2023 astrology by sign. So, you know, different transits that will affect signs more than others. And that's, again, that's free. It's astrologyhub.com/2023. And of course, if you have not yet had the pleasure of taking Rick's Astrology Foundations course, it is amazing. It is definitely one of those things you'll have in your library. You'll get to revisit over and over. And there's several different courses as a part of that foundation series. So you can check that out at astrologyhub.com/foundations1, or you can check out the whole bundle of all the courses in it at astrologyhub.com/Levine bundle. Also in February from Rick, we're going to be having the long awaited septiles and quintiles class. Am I saying that right? Septiles, quintiles.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I think we're going to retitle that. I think we're going to title that harmonic aspects.
Great. I love that.
Yeah, yes, because that's what quintiles and septiles are. And so, yes, I'm excited about this. I've been kind of making notes and putting things together. This will be the first time that I've put, this is 30, more than that, 40 years of interest and work this will be the first time I'll be putting that together into a single concrete course. I'm very excited about it.
Oh my God. Lucky us. Yes. That's amazing. And there's really not that much information out there on these.
No. And unfortunately, the information that's out there is not mine.
There you go.
It's not complete. Not that what I'm going to be teaching is complete, but I think, it'll definitely add to the discussion.
Okay, awesome. So that's coming in February. So be on the lookout for that. In the meantime, thank you so much for being here with us. Thank you for being a part of our community. Thank you for making astrology a part of your life. Thank you for being interested and curious and just so much fun to share this with. So thanks, everybody. And Rick, you're the best. You're so awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you. For continuing to so generously share your time and your wisdom with all of us. Oh, thank you. All right. Take care, everybody. And we will catch you on the next episode. My first astrology reading literally changed my life. I was in the midst of a significant dark night of the soul. And that reading gave me the hope and confidence that I needed to continue on my path, no matter how challenging things were. I've had the pleasure of seeing the impact that a high quality reading can have on thousands of our community members. This is why we at Astrology Hub have been working so hard to create a platform where you can find and book astrology readings with the most trusted and experienced astrologers in the world. We've created a new platform called Astrologer Connect, and we've been testing it with our Inner Circle members with great success. So I'm inviting you to get on the waitlist now so you can be first to book when we do open the platform. You can go to astrologyhub.com/readings and secure your spot today. I can't wait to hear your story after you've had the chance to consult with one of our amazing astrologers, many of whom you've met here on the podcast. Getting on the waitlist is completely free and it doesn't bind you to anything. Go to astrologyhub.com/readings today. This podcast is presented by Astrology Hub. You can learn more and find all of our shows at astrologyhub.com/podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you can stay up to date on the latest episodes and help more people find the wisdom of astrology. Thank you for taking the time to do this now. Thank you for being a part of our community and for making astrology a part of your life.